Blog Talk Radio.
Evangelist Butler. Today the interview is Mr. Khalees Lee from the Atlanta, Georgia area. He will be discussing different topics. Some of them will have to do with reparations. Some of them would have to do with his own personal agenda and goals that and things that he has did for the mayor's office and his own businesses that he has and the things he has did for the community in which he lives in. So hold on. Mr. Lee? Mr. Lee? Hello? Butler, today the interview is with Mr. Khalees Lee. He is from the Atlanta, Georgia area. He will be discussing the topics I talked about earlier, his own personal things he has did for the center of Atlanta, the different businesses that he has, his belief on reparations, among other topics. How are you doing, Mr. Khalees Lee?
I'm fine. And when you're saying the name is Khalees Lee, you know, you got to pull the whole power into it. Khalifa.
Khalifa.
Yes.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Mr. Khalifa Lee on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Like I was saying, Mr. Lee is from the Atlanta, Georgia area, and he will be discussing reparations. He also will be discussing the things he's doing himself there in Atlanta for the community in which he lives. So take the show, Mr. Lee.
All right. Where would you like me to start? I got to start about myself first. So I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, born and raised, west side, south side. Been here going on about four decades of being a good southern gentleman.
Turn your volume up, sir.
How do I sound now if I talk a little louder like this?
That's better.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I hope I start rolling, I'm still loud. So, yeah, about 4 decades of being a good southern gentleman here in the city of Atlanta, my born place and resting place. This is the place to be, and I've always understood when, as a man of the city, that this city here has the potential to move the world. And I had the opportunity to leave the city of Atlanta for college after I attended the many great schools here, schools of excellence and high performance schools here in the city of Atlanta, being able to really get a real good bite and dive into the crux of what makes Atlanta Atlanta. And I call a lot of us the grandchildren of the civil rights movement because in many cases, a lot of the people who I went to school with, my parents were engaged in those organizations, those churches, those businesses who fought for our human and civil rights, and we had the opportunity to grow up with them all into this day. And that's the benefit of being from here. The amount of stories and legacies that you carry with you is really built upon a newness for what can be better. And I took that with me. I took that with me in my journey. So in my journey from leaving from Bates High School with my math and science vocational certifications, I journeyed all the way to the University of Virginia, but much of my work would build, frame a much bigger framework for what we would consider the oncoming movements of education to bring on what we are looking at today as restitution and reparations. First, establishing a project that would do the research and getting the school to acknowledge and then also apologize for their role in slavery, in the system of chattel slavery, the business of enslaving our ancestors here in these lands and taking us from our lands to put us in chains on our lands as well. Then as well with that work of building acknowledgement totems such as memorials and renaming of buildings and starting classes and instituting institutional programs and the uncovering of spaces and places where our bodies lay or we once been laid our head in terms of maintaining ourselves and our families. A lot of great work that will happen, I would say, a decade after they were seeing the good work that was being done by me and my comrades and peers and friends and teachers and leaders and educators and here down in Charlottesville, Virginia. I brought myself back home, though, to make sure I could take care of my family. And in that, I wanted to be sure I brought home a lot of the skills that I garnered while I was here in Atlanta, but also even more while I was away at school. So with that, I started several organizations and business entities that would see that we could see a betterment and uplift and beautification of what we see as Atlanta. Atlanta has been known as a city within the forest, and by golly, we're doing our best to fight to make sure we can maintain that. And with that, I became an urban grower and farmer and educator as well within that space of urban ag. So one of our first organizations was Hood 180, making sure we could establish the beautification system and feeding the homeless of the houseless and homeless communities, whichever you recognize and understand your words. Then as well, giving resources to families in need, such as clothing, connections to the resources of the city or the county, wherever we may have been doing our work, even sending food and water to deprived areas, such as setting up food and water drives and resource drives for Katrina. We have done a lot of things just with the organization, and we're building back up on that. I also established the alumni association for my high school, so made sure we were connecting our alumni giving them the legacy that we built back to the community, back to our schools, make sure the city itself and those who are taking seats along with those who are administrative teachers at our schools understand that we are still here in the community and we are doing whatever we can to make sure we can give to our students and youth, whether it be teachings and reconnections with us, networking with us, or scholarships. So we established a scholarship to send students with something, at least $1,000 to help them in college.
All right, now Atlanta, Georgia is a great place.
Yeah.
I would love to live in Atlanta, but I just cannot afford it.
Yeah, that's
all those places. I would have to live way past Atlanta, like 100 miles or more past Atlanta, Macon, Georgia, and places like that.
Yeah, that's how we feel.
Warner Robins, places like that, Warner Robins, Georgia. So,
yeah, that's how we feel, and that's why, you know, really taking myself forward and all the things I was able to start and push forward on, even as an artist and an activist and an educator, will bring me into really diving into my organizations and my community to work with the municipality, the city of Atlanta. So right now I'm coming in as a chair for the neighborhood planning unit with the city of Atlanta. So it's the mayor, the city council, and it's me as part of the structure for our community. And that way I can better help my community keep themselves in the community. Because just like you're saying, a lot of us, we find it hard to even stay in our own city that we help build. So giving our communities the infrastructure, the information, and the resources necessary so they can stay in their homes with the Clean Energy Advisory Board, Clean Energy Atlanta Advisory Board that we established as community members to get those new energy, green energy funds coming down from Joe Biden to those who need the most so we can stop paying such high rates to stay in Atlanta while also beating up those investors who've been taking away our homes. This has been key, so I totally understand what you mean because I'm living it for sure, because we tired. We tired in Atlanta.
You're tired in Atlanta. It's tired. It's tired. It's the cost of living is high there.
Yes.
So what is President Biden doing? What is the government doing? What is the city doing? What is the city doing to make it more affordable for the people who are already there to take it? What's going on?
So, for the most part, we are using
the high cost there seems deliberate. When I started coming to Atlanta when I was like 16 or 17, it was not like that. It was an all-black city, but it was not like that.
Yes.
It wasn't astronomical to live there.
Yes.
I used to afford to come there and do little extra bit acting parts in 2006, just when I started acting.
Wow.
I was in a Tyler Perry film. That came out in 2008. I did a Tyler Perry film that came out in 2010. I started acting in 2006, but I cannot afford to come to Atlanta. Plus, they don't pay extras enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's why they just did that strike, too, because even the extras need more money. And they brought that to Atlanta, too, within that time. Like, it's, oh, man, it's just, Phenomenal, why did you stay there?
Was this deal by the governor? Was this deal through gentrification? How did it get like this? I mean, it's hot everywhere. It's hot everywhere. I mean, gas and food. I don't know what we're paying for the war, the stimulus, or what America is paying all these hot costs for with the gas and the food. The hottest thing for me is gas and food.
Absolutely.
And homeowners insurance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to answer that question, you know, it seems as if it obviously is within the plan and the mode of what they are looking to have happen for these metropolitan chocolate city areas, or once chocolate city areas, you know, just like D.C., just like Charlotte. You know, a lot of our cities that were crowned our safe spaces have been slowly drained and wrenched away from us. And I mean like wringed away from us, my apologies. And purposely so because we made these spaces hot spaces.
I have to say this, those are safe cities for black people. They were safe cities for black people.
Absolutely.
At one time. I don't know if they're all still like that or not. I know Atlanta used to be a safe place to go.
Well, yeah, so we have to understand the dynamics.
And be around black people without all the discrimination.
Absolutely. And that's why we have to understand the dynamics of class structure. And that was the one thing that helped me survive going into college and even going into my schools here in the city of Atlanta. Because one of my elders here in the we'll say the nonprofit sector, I don't want to give too much information. The idea he told me was that, you know, if you're in these rooms doing this work, as he was moving me along, he was like, you know, pay attention to who's here, who's speaking the loudest, and who's always showing up. Those who are speaking loudest aren't always the ones who's really pushing the position to defend, but those who are consistently showing up are all typically the quietest, are usually the ones moving the money. And a lot of times, they don't look like me and you. And that's been the consistent tale of what I've been seeing and paying attention to and happening in all our spaces. Even Charlottesville, Virginia, was technically at least a half chocolate city. That space there has a large black community back in the 1940s and 50s. Between 1920s and 40s, and just like everybody else and every place else, they were pushed out through urbanism. And with that, they took or pushed the folks off the land to take a hold of the land so they can make more money off of our suffrage. Then welcome us back in to either buy-in or to rent off of the land to which was due to us. And this has become the consistent wash of our people, our community, and of our dollar. And by my own studies, which I have seen, hence why even today, right now, many of the metropolitan areas, like the city of Atlanta, like was at Loganville, right up north, Midwest. Cities are now taking up the mode of even starting their own reparations committee because they're now finally understanding the work that has been done against the people and residents and the legacies of their cities to really pull down the true glimmer of what their city should be or could have been. And to understand that is to understand, again, who's been the ones pushing the pen and the dollar in the background that you never see and never hear from. When we look down at the city, in the middle of the city of Atlanta, we recognize that that several of those communities down there were the middle, upper-class black communities, and then they were pulled to hell from their glimmer, from their high stance in the clouds by the consistent campaigns against our people, drugs, political and economic depravity. And let's not forget our own, we'll say, a cultural flight. When it comes to our own people, we have to also understand that when we started going to college, when we started integrating into these different spaces that didn't look like us, we started tasting and seeing and smelling a different grass. And that grass would be beautiful to us. And then we would start to have our children who no longer yearn to be or work or live amongst their own within their own spaces, take over mommy and daddy or grandma and grandpa's businesses. So we lost our legacies there and didn't see the green and the beauty in being in their communities or being on their farmlands or being in their townships. Didn't see that they could build a millionaire lifestyle if they were doing their best to go for, obviously. Well, a thousandaire, you know, 1940s, 50s, 60s. Within those spaces. And that should also be a part of the case of reparations, honestly, because, you know, when it comes to the mode of war, we also have to understand that media and propaganda go hand in hand.
So where do black people go? Where can we go in here in this country for a safe place without discrimination and racism. They're killing us with GMO food, according to Reverend Lionel Garrett, my last interview.
Absolutely.
So where are the safe places for us in this country?
Well,
I mean,
it's the community.
Racism is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
They lie, they steal, they cheat, they kill.
Absolutely.
Racism is brutal. They slander. Defamation
Absolutely.
Of character. They tear down our leaders. I mean, why are the safe places in this country? Are there any safe places anymore? Because Atlanta is where I've always wanted to be for about 15 years now. I want to be in Atlanta. I enjoy somewhere surrounding Atlanta in the urban areas, at least like 40 or 50 miles from, at least 30 miles from Atlanta, 20 or 30 miles from Atlanta. I can't afford it. Where can we escape murder? Where can we escape the violence, teaching the youth the violence to hate themselves and to hate each other? Where can we go where children can be safe and not talk that, not to have self-hatred for themselves and hatred for other black people? Well, are there any areas? And if you said areas, will the white people go there too? Will racism not necessarily white people, will racism go there too? Is there no racism?
That's a great question. And honestly, there's definitely an answer because, once again, when I brought up the idea of classism, it's the structures that have been built that pulls in our identities that we attach to, from which brings in those prejudices to further embellish the power or the autonomy or the threat of white supremacy, from which ultimately, in saying that, most people who are listening, I want you all to understand and know that you can be black and be a white supremacist. And that part there really throws people for a curveball when they hear that for the first time. You know, like it kind of shook me for a little minute, but I got it because I was living it. Like I was seeing it. It was around me at all times. I mean, here in the city of Atlanta and anywhere else I was going, I could literally look at the people and see like, oh yeah, you look like me, but your politics, your economic moves, your cultural values, your customs, your methods of operations, and even the purposeful manners in which you even, practice the spending of your dollar in the particular communities do not prove to be, we'll say, black loving. And in that, you know, to go backwards to answer the question before that, it's really needed to understand that the answer is yes. There are multiple communities, multiple areas, and multiple spaces within these black enclaves type cities
in which we can thrive.
Hold on.
We take Jesus Christ and God. I get that. But what do we do with Klansmen?
You said what do we do with what?
What do we do? I mean, I understand we pray to God. We believe in Jesus Christ. We pray. But what do we do with our own race is Ku Klux Klansmen?
Well, this is where
our skin folk ain't kin folk.
Absolutely. And so we go to our places and our spaces. So when you're finding cities like Atlanta, you must go to your people. I literally mean go to where your people are in at their highest form. Whether they are, if you feel as if you want to go to where your black people are thriving like you would like to move, then by all means go there. If you like to see your people thriving, move economically, then move that way. If you want to see your people or be with your people who are moving like you like to move culturally, spiritually, there are spaces which you can go to and be there and thrive there and live there and grow with them. Understanding the differences in these spaces is key. So that way we don't get burnt, as far as say, you know, you don't go in with high hopes and then you're misunderstanding what's happening around you.
And that's what a lot of times a lot of people, you know, have told me as they came to Atlanta. It's like, oh, I expected to have so much support, and it's supposed to be such a black loving Mecca type city, and everybody, and they just give their complaints, and many of us as Atlantans saying like, yeah, well, you don't understand what makes a city, one, but also two, we just have the same problem that any other body city have. You can't just come into somebody's home and think you're just going to run ship. You got to check in. Like, you got to learn the people, learn your community so you can find, as we say, your tribe. And that's how you protect yourself and defend yourself against the Klansmen, against the low-key Klansmen, to keep yourself wary and away from the night riders, because they are always there looking and watching, seeing how you're moving, and also keep your, and also finding the people who can keep your head low and show you how to keep your head low to move through the forest of the work that's happening around you. Because we have to be there for each other and protect each other. Because, yeah, we can get reparations. How are we going to make sure we maintain it amongst ourselves and our community to where we can totally move it in a circle multiple times instead of just that one quick 6 hours? How can we move it for 48 days, you know, without knowing who has the resources for what within the spaces in which you live, in your communities and your townships and your states? You're ultimately just recreating the wheel of your degradation.
I don't know. Atlanta always seemed like a great place when I used to come there. I love Juneteenth celebration.
No, Atlanta's still a great place. Don't get it twisted. We still the hotness is just understanding the truth behind the mask. You know, is what I say. You know, just understand the truth behind the mask, and knowing that there's always more. There's always more layers to the onion that need to be uncovered. You know, you need to understand what we all need to be sure we're seeing and smelling and viewing and accepting and loving on the full embodiment of what things are, so that we could properly engage it. Because I never, I'm not gonna say I never thought. I was expecting it to take a little bit longer for us to be engaged in reparations here in the city of Atlanta. But once again, once people start to hear certain people engaging a conversation, you know, people want to get ahead of the game and also take limelight. So, because they know that it's coming and they know that it's needed.
Reparations is needed. Rubber bottom dance said there was an elephant in the room. There is an elephant. I believe in a living wage and a living income. I said this on two or three shows. President Barack Obama was on a YouTube video talking about, doing an interview. He was talking about a living income for Chicago, for people in Chicago. It's $500 a month. I don't know who gets it, what the criteria is. There's an income limit. I don't know any of that. I don't know anything about it. All I know is there are people in Chicago getting $500 a month of living income. That's better than nothing. There has to be reparations. There has to be reparations. There has to be reparations. I don't know what reparations should look like, be like. I don't know if it should be in the form of grants, housing, education, business, property, oil, money, all of the above. But America, like Reverend Lionel Gant said on my last interview, has a black problem. That's what Reverend Lionel Gant said. They have a black problem.
Yeah.
And they keep America without addressing it.
Absolutely.
And it's economics. It's economics. I mean, I don't know if it's even include therapy. Making more black people licensed psychiatrists and therapists, case managers. I don't know what it's going to take.
Oh, it's going to take all of it. Give it all.
And they're just going to do it for us. We're going to have to fight for it.
Well,
and so many of us are mental.
Uh-huh. And we have to build the structure for ourselves.
From watching those murders on television, knowing about our history, instead of it, it seems like black people are killing each other. And I don't understand why. We got all this racism to deal with, but yet they're killing each other. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. Mr. Lee.
Uh-huh.
It don't make no sense to me, sir.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Is it because I'm from a different time period, because I'm in my 50s?
Well, a little. But the idea is that you're also talking about culture. And culture brings us into analyzing lifestyle, brings us into analyzing
What the younger generation is saying. Tell me what the people in their 30s and 40s are saying.
Some are saying the same thing, but this is why I'm saying I always lean back to the idea of culture. Because in my culture and custom, we understand that everybody has their truth, yet we have our spiritual capacity within our cultures that bring us to the light, to understand that I can recognize the sister and the brother where they are in their time. And I can give them information. I can give them the love. I can give them the resources to bring themselves to a betterment. Because we might not be pulling a trigger. We can still be killing our brothers and sisters without ever dropping a drop of blood from their bodies. And that's the real twist turn of perspective when we're talking about us on us violence. A lot of times we put the direction on the guns.
Black people are so emotional.
Yeah, we forget there's other ways that we're working against each other. And I'm loving my generation's time, from which a lot of us are seeing what our foreparents and parents before them had been doing. Much, for the most part, like a lot of the generations of today, for survival. So these killings have been happening out of survival mode. This is all survival mode, especially when you're trying to figure out why things are so bad for you, or you're trying to make a way for yourself. Because sometimes, honestly, when it comes to certain, we'll say, cultural groups, I don't want to just give them the old nickname of gangs or anything. Like, these are groups of people who have their own morals, their own codes. They might not be operating off the codes which they were initially given, yet they have their own codes, and that needs to be understood. But they get up in rank, and sometimes they might get access to certain resources in these certain spaces, and that needs to be understood, because if that's the case, we need to engage them from that perspective.
And drugs. Everybody's scared to say the word drugs. We know the white people put them in the black community. We know whatever Martin Luther King Avenue, Boulevard, Street, Lane, there are usually drugs. So we know Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. legacy was deliberately tried to destroy it. What do you think about drugs? Why anybody want to kill you? What's your opinion? What's the answer? Mr. Lee? Mr. Lee,
yes.
Why anyone hurting you or doing anything to you? What do you have to say about drugs?
What I have to say about drugs in terms of my thoughts about them?
Yes, sir.
Well, it depends on the perspective, because for me, drugs can be a weapon as much as they can be a healing tool. It's just the capacity of what they are and where they're being used from. For instance, fentanyl and the heavy course things that are being used as destructive tools definitely need to be eradicated and removed from our areas, our spaces, our communities. So I'm happy that things such as the Narcan have been given to our communities, to professionals, and able for regular folks to purchase, to be placed in homes. But once again, we're talking about capitalism based on a lack in need and those who are deathly in need. And so when it comes to deathly in need of healing, certain drugs like marijuana, like mushrooms, we're seeing those once heavily considered illegal drugs. Even I forgot the scale that they put it on, but it was basically a scale that was worth felony time. Many cities and states have been drawing back on those old law codes to where they can actually deal with the issues of the people and stop criminalizing the drugs that our communities, that they themselves, not the people, but the forces that were supposed to be protecting them, have been placing our communities to lead to the destruction. Ultimate destruction itself was utilizing these particular drugs as gateways to making money, more so than utilizing it as a way to escape their lifestyle or the conditions which they're in, which many people did, many people have. And that's the part where you're talking about therapy. We need that to be coupled with our cultures, our cultural usage of drugs. Yeah, we also need to understand what these things are for. Because me as a plant man, anything is a drug. Basil can be a drug. it goes into your body. Hence why the FDA is Food and Drug Administration. We talk about consumables and things that are being abused in your body can be deadly. And when things are being given out to people who don't have an education, who've been deprived of the cultures that were attached to these particular tools, yes, it can be even more deadly than it was even designed to be. And that's what we're dealing with now. We're dealing with the fixing of those things from my generation, having done the research, having listened to our elders, having traveled the world, having done the studies and reading the books of your generation and the generations before you, and really finding how and why these once medicinals, healing, holy medicines were removed and then demonized from our communities, and then even more so, even worse, they've been altered, heavily altered, to where now even the most holiest of plants are almost deadly weapons, are even more still deadly weapons still. So better understanding what we're dealing with in terms of the science, the scientific purposes of what we've been given, but also understand the political purposes of why they've been dropped on us, especially in the times when we've been economically deprived in the most methodical manner to take all the resources possible from our communities, and the resources also being black men as well as a resource, black leadership as well as a resource, black organizations as a resource, as many of us know that many of our freedom fighter, black righteous organizations such as the Black Panther Party of Self-Defense, one of their major drawbacks was the usage of drugs. And then not understanding what those drugs could do at the time. And then that being used against them. Some organizations I'm not going to name, they were utilizing, not saying the parents were, but that there were certain organizations that were utilizing drugs to even survive. Because it's hard to make money while trying to be in the, as we say, be in the struggle and actually be able to travel, be able to jump from state to state, city to city, and help people who are in need, but also keep the alphabets off of your back, as they would say, without leaving a trail. Like it's been, in many cases, our destruction point, but also being our saving grace, so. I have a very mixed relationship when it comes to just talking about and dealing with drugs, because it's been so damning in terms of my life personally within the community and my family that I've been able to experience and see, and also just studying it for so long. If it wasn't for the drug game, I'm not sure where we would be today, because I'm also including alcohol as a drug too. Look at what we have today, one of my biggest billionaires who's in his own fights right now, P. Diddy, sells liquor. Or did. one of the biggest money makers was liquor. Liquor is considered a drug. So with that, we're still in the drug game. Now, whether or not we are doing so up under the table, doing so behind on the corner, we are now watching ourselves being able to, we'll say, to win and survive in a more comfortable manner with what was once being used as a tool to lock us up and take us away from our communities and our families and economically ruin us. And then,
and they did some black women too.
Well, absolutely. I know that's why I didn't generalize that particular point. But it was definitely a heavy attack against the men. But then in the attack against the men, then comes the attack against the women, because you take the men out and you place the men with community resources such as TAMF and food stamps, and stories from my generation coming from their parents and their grandparents saying that they couldn't have a man in the house because if they had a man in the house, they couldn't get food stamps. And they had to get on food stamps because they couldn't get jobs from the white factory owners or the white business owners or the white families who didn't want to hire no more black people coming to their homes. Why didn't want to hire no more black people coming to their homes? Because they had black people out there.
Black people's economy.
Fighting. They didn't want to support those families who were fighting in those rallies and fighting and doing those marches. But it's okay, y'all going to be out there doing that? None of y'all can come here and get paid no more. Like it's always been a war. It's always been a game of war when it comes to how we're dealing with other people. So at this point in time, in our timeline, we're seeing us now being at a point in which we can all work together or have the resources to better work together. We have a more guided mind to come together and build the infrastructure so that when as reparations being ready to be doled out, we can for certain ensure that we create our own parachute that we can better control and we can actually hold the reins on. Because it's one thing to ask for people to give something to you, another thing to say, okay, give it to us so we can be sure that we can administer it properly.
People keep talking about the government, entrepreneurship. Everybody knows entrepreneurship as well. I'm an entrepreneur, and I don't make hardly anything.
Mm-hmm.
What about entrepreneurs like me who don't make anything?
Well,
who are trying their hardest to help?
Well, me as well, and that comes into the type of entrepreneurship that we dive into. Unfortunately, we're still in the capital state, and the whole point of capitalism is for somebody to be the capital. Somebody has to be at the top. Somebody has to be the big dog. And at that point, you're playing the game of how can you reach top or how can you pull resources from the top. So in that, the way we survive in capitalism is that you have to have something to sell. So being able to shift what we have and what we have access to, and for instance, me as an artist, whatever I create, I do a service as an artist. As my videography and my media work and my community organizational work and my event coordinating and programming work and other things that I do, but something that I can cut and print and paste and have readily available on the dime, so I can make quick dollar, heavy dollar, and multiple dollars, is pivotal for a space like mine, because as an artist, I can create one thing, and that one thing can make me money for the rest of my life, and I never have to recreate that one thing ever again. Just like, for instance, Andre 2000's album that just released. That one album may not have got big if it wasn't for one of his first tracks that got big, Players Ball. Players Ball is still played to this day as a hip-hop Christmas album, a Christmas track. Like, we have to guide ourselves through the system from which we're in. Which is funny, I'm even talking about this. I'm giving light to my ancestor, my father, who had passed, but him as a fruit of Islam, he let me know because I had problems with this structure society since I was a child. And I had to understand because I was asking, like, why are we still playing these games? Why are we still existing in this society? Why don't we just move somewhere else or go somewhere? It's like, no. And we believe in our culture, in our system, in our life, we must understand that if we're going to be here and live here and exist here, we have to move with the law of the land. What that means is if we're going to be from capitalism, we have to move with capitalism. So in that right, the Nation of Islam was able to buy businesses. They were able to start businesses, I was able to buy land. Land such as farmland, land such as buildings and rental properties. They built and made infrastructure. So just like, for instance, like we talked about drugs earlier, my favorite rappers will always say, if you started off in your teens and now you're in your 30s still selling drugs, you ain't doing it right. You're not doing it right. You're supposed to get your money and then shift and flip. Same thing for entrepreneurs. Love what you do, but also invest in other manners of making money, because when we're looking at across the board, across the table, the people that are not at our table, but across to the other tables, we see that many of the entrepreneurs have been getting to their millions and billions because they're investing in other avenues. They don't have to themselves work in those avenues, yet they're letting their dollars work in those avenues. So as an entrepreneur for me, you being a media worker, I can invest in your work and your business and say, all right, I need some help getting my visualization out. And so with that, I invest my dollars into you. And then you find someone else to create your artwork and put infrastructure behind your look. And then it keeps flowing from there. And that's how we actually had it. That's how we had our Greenwood to Tulsa. That's how we had our Auburn Avenues in Atlanta. That's how we had our black spaces where we were literally able to drop dollar for dollar, work from space to space, and invest in each other to ensure that we could all thrive as entrepreneurs. Because that blew my mind. We had miniature millionaires in the late 80s, 90s, early 1900s in the United States of America. And they didn't tell us those stories growing up. We had to go dig those stories up. And we had to figure out, my generation had to figure out, well, if they could do it back then, and they didn't have a cell phone. How did they do that then? Well, because they had no choice. Many of them didn't have any choice, but some of them did. They had to survive and focus on ensuring that each person could thrive in their space. Because if my doctor friend could survive and thrive, that means that my family, who are carpenters, can survive and thrive. Because eventually, that doctor is going to need some help with this door. So he can help my family take care of their health and keep moving it around the community in that same manner. That's how we all, as entrepreneurs, can boost ourselves up and get to that thrive level and get up out of that survival chokehold. And then in that method, we need that economic boost from the reparations. We need to make sure that happens. Also, in reparations, talk about things that can be offered. Economic education needs to happen. And I say a renewal of economic education. Just going to school to get an MBA, yeah, you know how to run a business, but you don't know how to run a community. You know how to start a 501c3, but you don't know how to ship packages across the waters to operate an organization, a multinational organization that serves people in several countries that do the work that you're that focus on issues that you focus on with your 501c3. Like, there's levels to what we're dealing with that makes our situations as melanated people, brown, melanated, indigenous, Afro-indigenous people, and American indigenous people, unique, because we have many needs that have been brought upon us. So we have to think a little bit, we have to move and think and guide ourselves differently to ensure our survivability.
You know, I hate to interrupt you. I would change the subject a little bit, but do you know felons cannot serve on a jury, nor can they vote?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you believe that everybody that's American citizen vote, even if they're in prison?
Number one, absolutely. And number two, if you did your time, you did your time. Point blank period. If you did your time, you did your time.
You should continue to be punished.
You know what I'm saying? You should have the choice to involve yourself back in society. But ultimately, if you did your time, why are we still punishing you? Why would we still punish you? Be free. If you're going to be free, be free. Certain people, they do need to be sure they have the reins on them. So if that's the case, then watch. Put them through programs and processes that will, in order for them to be strengthened so they don't have to return. And still with that, we're also talking about a capitalist society. So they make money off of our people and others, because not just our people, there are others who are felons who can't access the economic growth of their freedom.
Yeah,
because they have big old F word on that paper.
That's still being punished after they do the prison time.
Exactly. So in that, I'm happy to say that I've found a few cities and states that have been doing research, at least starting to.
And I hope things get better in Atlanta and other cities. I pray it gets better for America with food.
Absolutely.
Insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Food, insurance, gas, and mortgages. I hope this madness ends.
Oh, I'm speaking that it is, and I'm seeing that it is. Like, slowly but surely, it's definitely it. It's slow, definitely it, because
in America,
it's going to get very chaotic, and they will not be able to control the chaos that will come if they keep on going down the road that they're going. And we're seeing that right now with the current fighting against Cop City here in the city of Atlanta. And we're not the only cop city that's being created around the states, as they're currently trying to deal with these situations over in the so-called Middle East that are connected to these quote-unquote cop cities here in the states. Trust me, they know what's happening and they know what's going on. So when you're seeing these cities starting reparations committees, it's probably because they're trying to find the best way out of this calamity that they caused. So
they have to get reparations. Black people, when America gets a cold, Black America, when America gets a cold, Black America gets pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And,
with the last card and the first blood, no. With the last card, with the first three fired, I'll let go.
Exactly, and that's purposeful. Because they make so much money off of our lack. They've become rich skillfully so from keeping their foot on our neck.
I just always never could figure out why was poverty such a necessity.
Mhm.
That's how I never could figure out. Why being poor was a necessity for this country.
In terms of how they operate the system, in terms of keeping us poor?
Yeah. Why is that such a necessity to keep a certain percentage of the population, a certain percentage of the race poor?
Because we'll be
racism, of course, is the answer, but, you know, because the poorest Black person is homeless with no place to stay, and the poorest white person, usually, a lot of the times, still has a place to stay. You know what I'm saying? If it's no more than a car.
Absolutely. And so what we're seeing is that system of poverty being utilized as an economic heel. So the homeless person you're talking about, they might not be working, but they can get locked up. That body that's locked up is a good college tuition worth of money that's being paid to the prisons to keep that prison up and running.
Yeah, this country has a problem. It's a Black problem. And killing us off and sending us to prison is not the answer.
It's a greed problem. It's not a Black problem. It's a greed problem. And they're focusing on us as a method, as a direction to which they access that greed. So this is why I'm finding it very interesting, this recent influx of immigration that they've just done, because, you know, who is really going to be kept in the bottom shell of this structure here? One, and then two, who's going to build?
But all racial people who didn't come over here voluntarily, Black people are.
Absolutely. You know, all against us. Key to that. Because how else could a capitalist society exist if it wasn't for somebody which they can consistently, economically, empirically drain? You know? And they've seen us, like, once again, I talked about the Black Mecca cities, the Wall Streets across the states. They saw us thrive. They know what we can do without them. We don't need them. So they made sure at any point, every point, we could need them, because once they guarantee that we can't need them, they can guarantee their survivability. And by golly, they guarantee they can make that work. And us unknowingly, in quotation marks, guarantee that.
And we don't speak in our language. We don't speak in African language.
a lot of Mexicans speak in their language.
That's true. That's true.
Puerto Rican, Mexican, Asian, China, Japan, a lot of them speak in their own native language. But we're the only race of people who, just about the majority of us, do not know our own native tongue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't have...
We're forbidden to speak in our own language.
Mm-hmm. And that is also key. Language is definitely a key for economic control. And if everybody can read your language, why are you trying to move your dollars? That can definitely be your windfall. I say that we're growing past that too. We're growing past that too, slowly but surely. But it's definitely been an hindrance to our ability to grow. I definitely agree with that. So in reparations, talking about reparations, that also is a part of it too. You have to put together that infrastructure, or rather take on the infrastructure, because I know a lot of people, I have a couple of friends, have organizations designed to make sure that our people are educated in several indigenous and African languages, American indigenous and African indigenous languages. We have no more excuses. The only thing that we're lacking at this point in time is desirability. Our people's desirability to want to escape the matrix that is this society structuralism. Like, being sure that we see the sun shining on a different grass, to where all people, all of our people, can live, thrive, and succeed happily and undisturbed, without the need and want of anybody.
That's the living wage, a living income.
Universal
reparations. I don't know what that should look like, though, or how much it should be.
Oh, I mean, one of the best ways, the best examples to look at, you know, unfortunately, we have to look at, like, Switzerland. They make sure they have a certain economic payment, make sure they have a house or home to live in. They even make sure they're trained and own a gun. Imagine how our society would be if we had access to that.
Access to what?
Access to that type of universal income treatment, where you get a home, you get training to own a gun, then you actually own a gun, and then you get an economic payment from the government to live and deal with oneself within the society in which you're in, as well as you can get a job on your own too, that you're actually encouraged because you're trained in those skills on the dime of your country. That is powerful. And that's something that I would fight for. And I've definitely suggested to several people that should be a part of our economic plan for reparations. So with the work that I've been able to do.
I think a living income should be for everybody, and weapons training for everyone.
Absolutely.
Insurance
definitely should be.
A house should be. A guaranteed place to stay. All right, sir. Thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Minister Lee.
Thanks.
I look forward to having you back.
I look forward to continuing watching your growth. Thank you so much. I'll be back.
Thank you, son. I'll send you a copy of the interview when it's downloaded, and I'll write it up.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
All right.
Yeah. Enjoy working with the mayor of Atlanta. In the city council.
I'll do my best.